OYOTU.com.
Sign Language with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 140 of Sign Language. It must have been 2 months since I did an episode, and I'm wondering, where the hell did that time go? It just flew by. So my apologies. I kind of got a bit of a kick up the butt from Rob Bettler because he sent me an email the other day going, you know, what's going on? So I thought, yeah, it's long overdue, and I'm about to head off for 10 days on a photographic project. So I'll be gone for the following 2 weekends. So I thought, I really should just crank out an episode, even if it's only a short one, get something out the door before I go, just so that, you know, it doesn't end up being 3 months between episodes. So the first thing that I had on my list of things to cover, Eventide, who for many decades have produced some absolutely gorgeous pro audio hardware, have developed a plugin which they call the Ultra Channel. And looking at the screen capture, it kind of looks like a combination between a channel strip and a master section. Basically, you've got an input, a gate, a compressor with saturation, an opressor, whatever the opressor is. I'm assuming that's sort of like a fast attack compressor, you know, slash limiter. Micro pitch shift, left and right stereo delays, completely customizable for each channel, and a 5-band parametric EQ. Now, the reason I mention this is because you can grab a fully functioning version of it for 2 weeks. So basically, when I first saw this, I thought they were just doing the promo for 2 weeks from the time that I discovered it. But I realize now that what it is you can download this plugin and run it free for 2 weeks. And after that, obviously, it's going to nag you to buy it. It's available for VST, AU, and AAX64. If you do decide to buy it, it's about $250. So it's not cheap as plugins go. It's on the expensive side. But if it's anything like the hardware that Eventide have produced over the years, it's probably going to be a pretty damn awesome plugin. So anyway, just thought I'd bring that to your attention. Check out the link that'll be in the show notes. There's a couple of YouTube videos there, which obviously, you know, show you the plugin in action, and hopefully have been recorded by somebody who knows what they're talking about, unlike 90% of the crap that you find on YouTube. Anyway, moving on. Tips and tutorials from iZotope. I discovered after my my conversation with the guys at iZotope, you know, a couple of months ago, that on their blog, they have a whole section devoted to tips and tutorials. And it covers all of the different plugins that they produce. So I thought that I would just bring that to your attention, just in case, like me, you were unaware that they had all of these tips and tricks hidden away on their blog. So again, that link will be in the show notes. So if you want to check it out, go to it. So then Rob Bettler sent me this epic email, as Rob tends to do. So epic, Rob, I'm not going to go through all of it, man. Sorry, it was a little too erratic for me. But interestingly, that one of the first things that Rob mentioned in his email was something that I had seen a week or so back, and I'd put this on my list of things to discuss next time I got around to recording sign language. Basically, what they did was they called this the visual microphone. What they did was they set up a sound source in a room, and then they had a empty chip packet, right? Potato crisps. Yep. Empty packet sitting on the floor. And then they aimed a video camera through a soundproof window. So the video camera could see the chip packet, right? Couldn't see anything else in the room, right? There was this dialogue occurring elsewhere in the room, but that was out of the view of the camera. Using an extraordinarily high frame rate for the visual that was being picked up by the video camera, they were able to measure tiny fluctuations in the plastic of the chip packet and used those fluctuations to create an audio signal, which allowed them to hear, quote unquote, the dialogue that was taking place in the room. If that sounds absolutely freaky the way I'm describing it, wait till you watch the video. Believe me, it is un-freaking believable. I mean, obviously, the audio quality of the reconstructed speech is absolutely horrendous. It's like the worst thing you could possibly imagine if you were a forensic audio, you know, restoration specialist. It's kind of in that realm in terms of difficulty to understand. But watch the video. It's amazing. To think that they could reconstruct this dialogue with no audio input whatsoever. All it was visual input. It was simply a camera with a stupidly high frame rate picking up the subtle fluctuations in the empty chip packet sitting on the floor. It is amazing. And of course, if this is, you know, the sign of things to come, wow, you just wonder, where does it go from here? Rob had lots of very interesting theories on that front. Something else that Rob had in his email was a link to a blog post called Subliminal Ghosts, The Psychoacoustics of Infrasound and Biological Horror. Now, I will confess to not having heard prior to reading this the description infrasound. Having read up about it, it's allegedly stuff below 20 hertz. Now, I personally would have thought of that as being subharmonic, but apparently infrasound is the terminology, at least according to the guy who wrote this blog post. And basically, the story goes, this guy was sitting in his lab working away, caught a glimpse of something out of the corner of his eye, freaked him out, turns around, disappears. And it was all to do with resonant wind through a ventilation fan that created, you know, this weird sensation that he was being observed, and that, you know, he went on to study this and found that 17 cycles per second, the 17 hertz audio, can create quite an unnerving sensation to most human beings. Anyway, the blog post goes on to say that some movies have deliberately used this in the soundtrack so as to create a sense of unease in the people watching the film, because that was the intent of the, you know, director or producer. A couple of movies that are mentioned in this blog post is a 2002 film from France called Irreversible, and one that's probably much better well known, a film from 2006 called Paranormal Activity. Now, I'd not seen either of these films. I'm not into horror. I went and downloaded a copy of Irreversible. Ouch. I've got to say, this is, without question, the nastiest piece of cinema I've ever watched. It is so confronting. The Wikipedia article describes it as being the kind of movie that, you know, the majority of people who watch it will not get to see the end of it. They just will have had enough by, yeah, long before they get to the end. And I've got to say, I'm seriously wondering whether I'm going to get through it. It's very hardcore. Anyway, but the audio that goes along with it is rather, I don't know how to describe it. Discordant, maybe, would be one way to describe it. It's really edgy in a horrible kind of way. It's actually done by one half of Daft Punk. But I think the cinematography is also just, you know, designed to be unsettling. So yes, I don't know if I'm going to watch the end of it or not. As for Paranormal Activity, that's just horror, and I really just don't enjoy horror at all. So I don't know if I'll bother with Paranormal Activity. But I thought this whole thing was an interesting read. There's a thing here. Researchers in the UK wanted to see the emotional effect infrasound had on an audience based on previous speculation that infrasound generated in organ pipes during liturgical recitals incited a feeling of awe in spectators. An audience heard a concert of four pieces of music, two of which had a low tone of 17 hertz playing over them. They were not told which pieces contained infrasonic elements. Afterwards, 22% of the audience claimed that they began to feel uneasy during the performance, experiencing chills, extreme sorrow, and fear. So yeah, interesting. I would imagine it would take one hell of a good subwoofer system to reproduce 17 hertz. Although, I suppose any sub could do it, it's just that we wouldn't hear it as such because it's below, you know, the lowest frequency that we are likely to perceive. Yeah, anyway, it's interesting. But later in the article, or somewhere else in the article, there was a thing about, oh, here it is. Wind and storms can generate infrasound if heard down a chimney or through a long corridor, which then acts as a resonance chamber. The reason for this is a phenomenon called Helmholtz resonance, which, you know, we've probably all heard of Helmholtz resonators, or maybe you haven't. A Helmholtz resonator is a cavity designed in the wall of a recording studio, and the cubic dimensions of the cavity are calculated so that it attenuates frequencies which would be at the standing wave interval of the distance between the opposing walls of that room. So if the room was 3 meters long and we said, okay, well, the, you know, the resonant standing wave between those two walls would be something just under 100 hertz, well, sorry, just over 100 hertz, probably, you know, 105, 108 hertz or something like that, then you could design a Helmholtz resonator, which is essentially an empty box but with holes. It's a very complicated algorithm, but you would work out the measurement and you work out what capacity the inside of the Helmholtz resonator needed to be and the size of the holes going into that cavity that would tune that cavity to that frequency of 105, 108 hertz, whatever it was, and it would then tame those standing waves. So, sorry, moving on, sidetrack there, which changes the frequency of a wave by constricting it in a cavity, in this case, a long thin room. Earthquakes, volcanoes, and certain ocean waves can also cause frequencies of infrasound. Now, that particular sentence really struck a chord with me because in 2006, I went over to the island of Tanna, which is one of the islands of Vanuatu, and I did some charity work. I was helping out a little FM radio station that's run out of a concrete bunker, and it's called Crest FM. Basically, up until 2006, these guys... let me just backtrack. The island of Tanna, it's about 40 kilometres long, 20 kilometres wide, has about 50,000 Vanuatuan people living on it, and they have this little FM radio station that broadcasts across part of the island. And up until 2006, these guys would go and record town meetings and interviews and whatever on cassette tape. This was up until 2006, people. 2006. That's only 8 years ago. They were still recording on cassette. So I went over there and set them up with a computer and Windows 2000 or XP or whatever it was at the time, and set them up with what was at the time the current version of Adobe Audition, which was must have been around about 2, 2.1 or something like that. And, you know, got them started with and showing them how to, you know, record interviews to the computer and then how to edit digitally and so forth. They thought it was just absolutely amazing. Anyway, sidetracked again. On the island of Tanna is a volcano. It's called Mount Yasser, Y-A-S-S-U-R. And Mount Yasser holds two distinct claims to fame, if you like. One, it is the world's most accessible volcano. You can drive your car to within probably 100, 150 meters of the rim of the caldera. Right, the caldera is the cone shape around the rim, right? So it's the most accessible. And two, it is the world's most continuously active volcano. It erupts around about 300 times a day. Right, it's about every 5 minutes or thereabouts, and has done so for 800 years. Right? So it's an absolutely awesome place to go and visit. The photographer in me absolutely loved it because I made sure that I was taken up there just at sundown. So I was able to get photos of, yeah, these lava trails spewing through the air with this fading light in the background. It was just absolutely gorgeous. The audio engineer in me was equally impressed, and I've said ever since that it was like nature's subwoofer. There is nothing else that I have ever encountered before or since that comes close to the feeling of standing on the rim of an active volcano, and when it goes woomph, it really goes woomph, right? It physically hits you in the chest. And when you think about the physics of it, it makes sense. You know, it is like one giant speaker cone. When it erupts, you know, you've got all this air that's, you know, being heated and projected outwards from inside the volcano, and it just rushes up the, you know, the inside edge of the volcano, and you're standing on the edge, and it just, wow, you know what it's like when you stand in a nightclub and you stand near the speaker bins and you can get that whoomph in your chest from the subs? Yeah. Imagine that in a way that is, on one hand, more subtle, maybe even a lower frequency, and yet on the other hand, more intense. It's difficult to explain. But I would absolutely say, if you ever, 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 ever get the opportunity to stand on the rim of a volcano at the time that it erupts, see, that's the thing. There's very few volcanoes that you want to be near when they erupt. Yasser is one of the few where, you know, every eruption is generally tame enough that it's okay for you to be there. The guide who took me up there told me that they have a rating system of 1 to 5. Basically, 1 is the lowest level of activity. 2 is a higher level of activity. 3 is the highest level of activity at which they will still allow tourists to go up to the rim of the volcano. Once activity reaches level 4, the whole of the mountain is closed to access by not just by tourists but by locals as well, and I think they actually they enforce an evacuation of about 2 or 3 kilometers around the mountain, and if it ever goes to stage 5, they evacuate the island. I don't know that that's ever occurred. The great thing about Mount Yasser is that it's just constantly just bubbling away, and like I said, probably every 5 or 6 minutes or so you'd get an eruption, and yeah, just the most amazing feeling that I've ever come across. It would, like, physically, it was just phenomenal. So yeah, anyway, so that kind of that struck a chord with me when I read that line in this blog post. Anyway, so yeah, feel free to read up on this. Again, the links will be in the show notes. And yeah, keen to hear anyone else's take on any of that. Now, there was a couple other things that I wanted to mention. One was that the guys at iZotope have just announced RX4, an update to their Emmy award-winning software for audio restoration. RX4 is due out next month, that's September 2014. And two of the new features that are included in RX4 are a leveler, which will automatically balance the volume of your mix, freeing more time for creative mix decisions. I've got to say, I will reserve judgment on that until I've tried it, because as a rule, I tend not to like things that want to do things on my behalf in my mix. I tend to be a bit of a control freak like that. But, you know, knowing the quality of the stuff that iZotope come up with, I won't give it a hard time just yet. I'll wait until I've actually tried it, because, you know, they might have done a very good job of it, and I expect that they will have. The other one is an EQ matching tool. That is a godsend for anyone, I reckon. I mean, I've got a pretty good ear, and I can usually match EQ pretty well. But having a tool that can listen to the sonic fingerprint of one piece of audio and then, you know, have a crack at matching that EQ curve, I'm all for that. Love that idea. Simply because matching EQ can be quite time consuming. So there's a couple of new features coming in RX4. It'll be very interesting to see those new features in action. So the link will be in the show notes, so you can check that out. There's a YouTube video on that page that you can have a look at, and I'm sure it'll give you all the juicy goss on the upcoming version of RX4. The other thing I wanted to mention is further to recent discussions about, you know, live performances at work. I've got another one coming up tomorrow morning, which is Monday morning, with a new girl group. They're called GRL. And from what I've seen, it's kind of like a, you know, today's version of the Spice Girls. What's going to be interesting about this performance tomorrow is that there are five girls who all sing, and they're bringing an acoustic guitar player and a ukulele player. So we need a DI for the guitar and a DI for the ukulele, which is fine. I've got those. But the record company requested five vocal mics and five stools for the girls to sit on in the booth. And of course, as fortune would have it, my booth at work only has four tie lines between the booth and the control room. So I thought, well, that immediately shoots down that idea. I can't do five microphones. And even if I had five tie lines, I don't know where I'd find five microphones, because I don't have five microphones in in the booth. So I've been thinking about this sort of late last week as to how I was going to approach this particular session. And I've decided that the approach I'm going to take is to set up two U87s, one in figure eight mode and one in cardioid mode, and do mid-side. Or I may put them both into figure eight mode and set them up as XY. Actually, I'll probably do that. Had more experience with XY than I have with mid-side, so I might go XY. And basically just set those two microphones up at 90 degrees to each other in figure of eight mode. You put the mics as close as you can get them, you know, to each other. So they're basically forming an L shape, and their two figure eight patterns essentially give you a true stereo image, which can be mixed down to mono without any phase issues, etc., etc. So, I'll look up a wiki article for recording in XY, just so you can see it, if it's easier for you to see it. Yeah, so next episode, I'll let you know how that went. So it's gonna be interesting, and I'm going to have to put the guitarist and ukulele player in my control room with me, which is going to be interesting, to say the least. But we'll see how we go. So yeah, it's going to be a fun one tomorrow. Had Paloma Faith in a couple of weeks ago, but she was very simple. It was just one vocal mic and one keyboard through a DI. So there wasn't much, you know, wasn't much required with that one. It was pretty simple. So, yeah, so that's the current state of play. Like I said, I'm off for the next week and a half photographing a rally, a car rally that goes over 9 days, covers 3,600 kilometres. So what's that? About 2,800 miles for the American listeners. That's going to be a hoot, absolute hoot, and I will endeavour to be a little more regular with sign language upon my return. All right, people, any questions, comments, feedback, please drop me an email, studio@audio2u.com. And until I speak with you next, take care.
Sign language.
Another audio2u.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out
signlanguagepodcast.com.
Or search the iTunes music store for questions, comments, and feedback. Email studio@audio2u.com.